program we make up at the end. We learn to disagree eventually without just being disagreeable. And that don't happen right away, believe me. I mean, in my home group, they still tell me to sit down and shut my mouth and get my self-will out of the way. But you see, I have a home group and I keep going back every month, and they know me well enough to tell me that. I become part of. If I didn't have a home group and participate, those people wouldn't know me well enough. And when I don't show up at my home group and I don't say where I'm going to be if I have another commitment, I guarantee somebody knocks on my door and wants to know what's wrong. Or if I sit there with a long face, they say, what's wrong with me? Go, nothing. Get off that shit. See, these people know me better than anybody else because they're involved with me on a monthly basis at the business meeting. They know my good points and they know my bad points. And I really believe that if you don't have a home group, you're not a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You're a visitor. I don't know about anybody in this room. Do you know anybody who joined Narcotics Anonymous? I know people that joined Narcotics Anonymous groups, but I don't know anybody who joined Narcotics Anonymous. So you come in, you say, well, I'm a member of Narcotics. A member of what? See, yes, the decision rests with the individual. You're a member when you say you are, but that means walking up to a group secretary and saying, I want to become part of this group and be what you're all about. The decision rests on the individual. We don't turn anybody away. They disqualify themselves. Say, I go to NA meetings. I'm a member. Well, what did you join? If you don't have a home group, you're a visitor. Where do you cast your vote in Narcotics Anonymous? Where do you become part of? And again, when we become part of a group, we're learning how to have a relationship. We're becoming part of, even if things happen that we don't like. We learn how to surrender, and it enhances our steps. And then we get into the fourth tradition, where it says each group is autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. And how many times do we hear that, dope fiend? Each group is autonomous. We'll do what the hell we want. Forget about the rest, except when to do so would affect other groups or NA as a whole. And that very simply means that if you're breaking the traditions, you're affecting other groups in the area or NA as a whole. In the basic text, it says when that happens for that second, that minute, that group ceases to be an NA group. Yes, a group is autonomous. It can do anything it wants within the 12 traditions as long as it doesn't affect adversely NA as a whole or the other groups. It can have the kind of formats it wants, the kind of readings it wants. It's autonomous in that area, but it's not autonomous to do anything it wants. It can do anything it wants within the 12 traditions. And isn't that true if we take that spiritual principle home? Each member of the family is an autonomous person. We're individuals, and we could do anything we want within the family unit except when to do so would affect any of the other members of the family. And where did we learn that? By participating in a home group. And when we go to work, we're individuals. We're autonomous at work, except when to do so would affect any other member of that job. And we're learning how to get along with other people, and we're getting better in spite of ourselves, providing we have a home group and we participate in these traditions. And we take them serious. So that's for NA politicians, service junkies. It's for individuals. Yes, they're written for the group so that addicts can learn those principles in the groups and take them home. And it tells us in the fifth tradition, our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict that still suffers. And everybody in this room tonight is an addict that still suffers, because we all suffer to different degrees. And our primary purpose as a home group member for the group is to make sure that that group has an atmosphere of recovery, not an atmosphere of problems. An atmosphere of recovery so that we can all get better together, that we have the meeting organized into the fact that there is a topic, if it's a topic meeting, not the leader of the meeting coming up and say, well, I haven't picked a topic for tonight. I only had a week to think about it. Anybody know what we're going to talk about? To spend 10 minutes on that? It's up to the group to make sure who's ever chairing the meeting has the speaker or the topic and to keep that atmosphere in recovery so we can get there and do what we're doing, getting better. And then we do the same thing in our families. What's our primary purpose in our families? Whatever our goals are. We learn that. The same thing in our jobs. And the sixth tradition tells us how not to divert from the fifth tradition. How not to divert from our primary purpose. And they talk about through endorsements and through money, property, and prestige. And what is an endorsement? The basic text says there's two types, direct and implied. A direct endorsement, we know what that is. Have the traditions and the steps of another fellowship hanging on the wall while our meeting's going on. That don't mean they're bad, but it means that it's not Narcotics Anonymous and it should be covered during the meeting. Because it diverts us from what our steps and traditions are. If we use literature or books of another fellowship, that's an implied endorsement because that's saying that that belongs during our meeting. Other fellowships' literature is great. People have been getting better with it for 50 years, but it belongs there and ours belongs where we are. And it needs to be covered or removed during our meeting. And it talks about, a second from the last paragraph in the text, that we need not have speakers from other fellowships. And that's misunderstood. That does not mean if a person goes to two fellowships, they cannot speak in Narcotics Anonymous. What it simply means, if they speak in Narcotics Anonymous, they speak of their recovery through Narcotics Anonymous only. Because if they speak about their other recovery, what they're doing is giving an implied endorsement. Not that that's bad, but it doesn't belong here. And our message doesn't belong there. Because as I said, people have recovered other places for over 50 years and they have a good message. And if a person needs that message, they need to go there. And when I come here, I need to hear this message because I recover here in Narcotics Anonymous. And the traditions are there to guarantee not to divert from the fifth tradition. It has nothing to do with NAPD, which I hear people talking about. There are some addicts who can't go anyplace else to get better. They're only comfortable in Narcotics Anonymous, and I happen to be one of those addicts. But also, in the business I'm in, there's times I travel, and I can't find an NA meeting, and I have to go somewhere else, and I respect their traditions and identify the way they do and use their language, because I'm going to be part of recovery tells me to respect guidelines. When I speak, I only use the language that is found in Narcotics Anonymous literature because I believe using another fellowship's language is an implied endorsement. And I'll tell you how that came about because I was one of the holdoffs. I was around before the basic text, and I grew up with the language of another fellowship, and I used the word sober and sobriety all the time. And when the NA language came out, I did not want to change. And I could not see why because I said I got better under the old way. Why should I have to change? It wasn't that important. And one day a newcomer came up to me after an NA meeting and he says, Vito, let's go over to the other fellowship. And I looked at him. I said, I don't go anyplace else but Narcotics Anonymous. And he looked at me and he says, Vito, you talk their talk. They must have the real deal. And I understand what they meant by implied endorsement, and I stopped using the language of another fellowship from that day on. But I'll tell you, if need be to go to another fellowship's meeting, if I'm out of town and can't find NA, I'll use their language there and not our language because I have to learn to respect their fellowship. And that's part of growth. And for me, at one time, I wanted to make them us. I wondered why they didn't like me. And I've grown from them, and I've learned from there. And the seventh tradition tells us that we have to be self-supporting. I know when I came into recovery, I was not self-supporting. I waited for that check from the state every month, twice a month to be exact. And I didn't know how to take care of myself. But by being part of a group, and putting that money in the basket and realizing that that group has to pay rent, buy coffee, buy literature, and donate to the area so that the phone line could be on and there's PI work, and putting my fair share in, I learned to pay my bills. And my sponsor told me what my fair share was. So I said to him, I said, what's a fair share to put into the basket? Because I used to throw a quarter in and spend $4 in the diner after the meeting. And he looked at me one day and he said, what's your life worth? And I started putting the money in the basket and buying coffee afterwards. And I learned what my priorities were. I have to pay for my recovery. And it taught me to pay my bills because I took that spiritual principle and I brought it into my family and I found out that I had to take the priorities in that family and pay them first before I had luxuries for me. The kids had to eat. They had to have clothing. The bills had to be paid. The rent had to be paid. Then Vito could take money in his pocket and go out to the diner with the people. And I learned that by putting it in the basket and through my home group. I've learned that spiritual principle. And that's an important part in relationships, because how many relationships did we burn because we took money that belonged in the home and we burned it in recovery? We went out and we spent on ourselves when it needed to be paying the bills. But when we learn our home group comes first, we learn our families come first. And in our eighth tradition, it talks about that we have no professionals in there, you know, but our service centers may employ special workers. You know, each and every one of us is a professional in the outside world, no matter what we do. But when we walk into Narcotics Anonymous, we're equal. None of us are any greater or lesser. Yeah, we have special workers to do special jobs. Service offices have office managers, clerks, telephone answers, World Service Office has coordinators. These are special workers to do work. But they're not professionals. They're just people being paid to do that. But in that meeting, we're all equal. It doesn't matter if we're rich or poor. Whether we're a counselor in a rehab or a lawyer or a doctor or a factory worker, we're all equal. And when we walk into our families and we find out we're all equal, she's not just the housewife and I'm the provider, we're equal. We learn a very important part of relationships. And if two people are working in the family, then we learn that we have to be equal there. We both have to share into whatever the duties of the house is. It's not one person's job, it's all of our jobs. And we learn that through that eighth tradition. And the ninth tradition, to me, is a lot like the fourth tradition against dope fiend. It says NA as such ought never be organized except, NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. What is NA as such? I believe NA as such is the recovery meeting, and that should never be organized. That's there to share our experience, strength, and hope through the 12 steps. That's NA as such, but NA as such may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And the first committee or service board they create is the group steering committee, the GSR, the treasurer, secretary. And what they do is they create that so that they don't have to do that business during NA as such. Can you imagine stopping a recovery meeting and calling for group conscience? We can't organize that. But we set up the first level, the steering committee of the group. And those steering committees get together with other steering committees and set up the area who are responsible to those groups. And those areas get together and set up a region, and that region is responsible to the area who's responsible to the groups. The regions get together and set up the conference, and the conference is responsible to the regions who are to the areas, to the groups, to the addict. And therefore, our highest level of service, as we call it, is directly responsible back to the addict, providing the addict has a home group and participates. So how many people don't even bother with the agenda report, and they say, look what them guys did. Those guys didn't do nothing. We did it by either lack of knowledge or not participating. There's nothing that happens in Narcotics Anonymous that's self-willed, even though people think they do. Say, those people in California are self-willing stuff. And that's not true. Our lack of involvement allows things to happen. Nobody self-wills. And if we don't participate, don't bitch. That's simple. You see, all those boards are accountable to us if we are accountable and participate. And doesn't that teach us to take that spiritual principle and bring it into our homes? Sure, we can set up one person to pay the bills and another person to do these chores. These are all sort of committees that we're doing within the home. But they're accountable to everybody in that family. The person that pays the bills, just because they pay the bills, doesn't mean they're not accountable to the other members of that family. We learn that through the ninth tradition. And we have that equality in our homes, which becomes another spiritual principle in relationships we learn in the home group through the traditions. And our 10th tradition tells us we have no opinion on outside issues. Hence the N.A. name, I'd never be drawn into controversy. And that's true. We don't have any opinions with what the DA is doing or the task force on drugs or what a rehab's doing or what another fellowship's doing. We could give a damn what they're doing. They're outside issues. The way they identify in the rehab, that's their business. The way they identify in another fellowship, that's their business. When it comes into our rooms, then that's an inside issue. That's not an outside issue. But what they're doing is there. Can you imagine going into a rehab and telling them how to run their program? That's their business. It's an outside issue. But at the same token, when those rehab people come to our meeting, that's an inside issue. We do have an opinion. And yet I've seen that dope fiend. No, we don't really give a damn what anybody does outside the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. That is an outside issue. We don't need to get involved in that. The only thing we're concerned about is what goes on in here. And that only happens if we participate. And isn't that true in our families? If we would concentrate on what our family's doing and not what the other families are doing. Look what the Smiths are doing. They're real sick over there. That's an outside issue. We need to concentrate what's going on in our homes. And we learn to have relationships with one another. And we've learned that through our home group in Narcotics Anonymous. And I think the 11th tradition, I think the basic text says that the best. It's a CPI manual. Because as addicts, we're not qualified dealing with the public. You know, we've tried it and we've goofed up things. We have people in public information that are specialized in that. I think the best thing for me is to be the best addict as I possibly could, and that's the best PI work that I can do. It tells us what our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion, that we must maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And that's the only place where it talks about personal anonymity in the traditions, is at the level of press, radio, and films. And we're not qualified to do that, and that's why we have public information. We just do the best we can as individuals and live the best life that we can. And that's a lot of attraction if we're working a program. And I think the 12th tradition is like the 12th step. It sums everything up that we've talked about. It says anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Well, when they talk about anonymity being the spiritual foundation, that happened in the first tradition. You see, when we focused on our common welfare, getting better from the disease of addiction, we just created anonymity. We're all the same. And when it says that's the spiritual foundation of all of our principles, well, what does Webster say that anonymity is? State of bearing no name. So that simply means that when a person walks into a meeting, they're not male, they're not female, they're not white, black, or red, they're not rich, they're not poor, they're just addicts. You see, if a good-looking girl walks into the meeting and we look at her like she's a piece of meat to hit on, we just violated her anonymity. She's not an addict. Number one, she can't get better. She can't get better, and we can't get better. Because the whole meeting, we're looking at that newcomer we're going to hit on before she gets too well to know what's going on. Or if the rich guy comes in and he pulls up in his BMW or Mercedes and we focus on him as being the rich guy, that makes him different. See, if we focus on anonymity, we're all the same, nothing more than addicts, and that's another reason why we identify as addicts only. Then we can all get better together. And if we focus on the principle of getting better, then the personality doesn't even get in it. And it'll always be principles before personalities automatically if we practice that anonymity. That's why when I identify, I say I'm an addict called Vito, because I place the principle of me being an addict before my personality to remind me that that 12th tradition is a vital part of my life. You see, when I take that into my home and allow that anonymity to come between me and my wife and other members of the family, and we're all equal, it's not master and slave. So many of us come in with those street attitudes as, I can't speak for the women, but I can speak for the men, that we run our house, we are the man, which is a bunch of bullshit. We need that anonymity in our homes. And guess what? Our relationships begin to work. You know, we go and we keep getting it. I've gone through three marriages in recovery. The marriage I'm in now is my third marriage, and it took me three marriages to find out that I need to have anonymity. I couldn't figure why my marriages and my relationships kept ending up. Because I would get into them and it had to be 100% my way. There was no anonymity. And then I realized the principles I've learned in the group need to be brought into my life. And my marriage today is working. Because I'm using spiritual principles. And these things are all part of relationships with ourselves and with other human beings. And all this is great. I knew all this stuff. And you know what? I had something like 15 or 17 years clean and I knew all this stuff. And I was married to a girl at that time that was a nun addict. And she used to say to me all the time, why do you go to those meetings? Why do you hang with those people from that side of the track? See, I've been around for a while, and I got this good job. I was a national sales manager, and I had this big $100,000 home, and the Cadillac, and the Chrysler New Yorker, and all this stuff, you know. And she would say, you need to belong to the Rotary, or the Kiwanis, and all this good stuff. Well, this addict loved to hear that stuff. So I stopped going to meetings. First, I cut down like one meeting a week, one a month. You see this all the time with people with time. Then once every 2 months, once every 6 months, all of a sudden I stopped going to meetings. I didn't go to a meeting for 6 years. I stayed clean. I didn't know something was happening, but something happened. The same thing when I was a newcomer. My feelings were froze. I began to stuff. And then one day, a major crisis happened in my life. See, I figured I graduated from the 12-step academy and I could handle anything. But I had a problem with one of my daughters, and I couldn't handle it. And I began to feel all those street things back. It was like the Pied Piper was out there, and he was calling me. And I recognized those feelings right away. I did not want to feel, and I couldn't stop feeling. And I wanted to self-medicate. And if I knew that if I left that house and put a needle in my arm, I knew I wasn't coming back. I knew it. I felt it. But I couldn't stop the feeling. And I thought to myself, you know, the typical addict without a program. Lock myself in the room, self-will, morning will come and I'll be okay. And I locked myself in that room and I banged my head on the walls and I put my fist through it. And the sun came up in the morning and that Pied Piper was still out there calling me. And I was afraid to go out because I knew what would happen to me. So I figured, bullshit, if I'm not going to feel, I'm going to take the biggest escape forever. And I tied a rope around my neck. And I hung myself. They tell me I was clinically dead. The girl that I was married to at that time had cut me down, got the ambulance there. They tell me I was clinically dead and they brought me back. And I was living in Pennsylvania at that time, and there's a law in the state of Pennsylvania that says that if you try to take your own life, they can commit you for observation or whatever the stuff is they do. And I had to go before a psychiatrist to be evaluated. And thank God to this day that this woman psychiatrist understood the disease of addiction, because after we talked for about 2 hours, she says, Vito, you're a little nuts like everybody in the world. She said, but your biggest problem is you're an addict without a program. And she told me that she wouldn't commit me, providing that I would promise to get myself to a meeting. And I not only went to a meeting, I ran to get there. My first sponsor had told me something once, when you're green, you're growing. When you're ripe, you begin to rot. And I understand I begin to rot. I got ripe. See, the first time around, I didn't get involved that much in service. That was for other people to do. I didn't give nothing away. I took. I was what I call an N.A. thief, and we have plenty of them around. They come and take and take and take, and then they don't give anything back and they disappear. And I was an N.A. thief. And this time I was going to make it different. I was going to stay green, and I got involved in service. I got involved with the home group that I have today, and I've had the same home group since 1978. I got involved in my area. I'm involved in my region because I need to do that. I go to 4 meetings a week, and people have said to me, Vito, with the amount of time that you have, why do you go to 4 meetings a week? I think you're hiding in meetings. And I look them right in the eye, and I say, I go to meetings because I want to learn how to live on life on life's terms. I have people working for me. I have a lot of money that goes through my hands through the company that I work through, and I have a big budget. And I do live life on life's terms, and I'm not hiding. But I come into the rooms to recharge my battery, to learn how to live with my weaknesses, because I have them. I'm an addict. I want to run when things get real bad. And I, instead of running, I come into the rooms and explain how I'm feeling. And I hear my own answers come out of my own mouth. But I just needed to sound it. And I learn how to do those things by participating in my home group. I'm involved in my region. The area I belong to belongs to the greater Philadelphia region, and I feel it's one of the better regions in the country. Because we practice traditions there. We learn to disagree without being disagreeable. We argue. We fight. We throw things. Thank you. But we hug, and we get things done. In our area, I feel the same way. There's a lot of times, most of the meetings in the area I belong to, I started, because when I moved to that town, there was only one meeting, my home group, and I'm like every other addict. I didn't want to give up control. I wanted to be a member of every home group in there, and we only have one home group. And they learned to tell me to get the hell out of their business meetings. I don't belong there. And we have an ASR that keeps me on my toes, because he calls me on my shit all the time. But you see, that's the stuff that keeps me green. And that's the stuff that keeps me getting better. See, when I used to think I was getting better, I was getting sicker. Today I realize that I'm sick forever, but it can be arrested, and I can get better on a daily basis if I keep coming back, because you people are the reason I get better. Thanks for letting me share. I love you.